What is Warner going to spend $535 million on? And why is Universal starting to focus on buying artist brands and likenesses? Welcome to Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends, where we go behind the headlines to help you understand what's really going on in today's music industry. Talking Trends is supported by Volley Music, a financial management platform for people working in music. Volley allows you to manage budgets and forecasts, as well as tracking expenses, approving invoices, and making payments 24/7. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's VOLYmusic.com. As ever on Talking Trends, we'll be discussing two major recent headlines in the music industry. I'm Louise Porter. And with me is Tim Ingham, the founder of Music Business Worldwide. Our first story this week is something of a mystery. According to an SEC filing published on Wednesday, Warner Music Group is raising $535 million in debt to acquire one or more music-related assets. Tim, what's going on? And how do you think Warner might spend this money?
So we found out about Warner's debt raise on Wednesday lunchtime, UK time, kind of morning New York time, via an SEC filing from Warner that was conspicuously detailed in what it revealed. Not only did that SEC filing confirm that Warner is raising the $535 million you mentioned to buy music and music-related assets, it actually further confirmed that Warner currently has three non-binding letters of intent out for acquisitions, i.e. acquisitions that are in play in negotiation. And the total cost of those three acquisitions, according to this SEC filing, is $710 million. So Warner is raising $535 million in this debt raise, but it's already semi-committed to spending $710 million on three deals. And that's what the new money is going towards. So then you start to think, what are the three acquisitions that Warner has penciled in? Obviously, any or all of them can be scuppered at any point. They're not done deals, but there are what we might like to call some kind of likely candidates. And I wrote about a few of them in a story yesterday. So the most obvious candidate for Warner to acquire is the songwriting catalogue of David Bowie. The Financial Times says that's currently on the block for around $200 million. Warner has something of a special relationship going on with the Bowie estate, partly due to a historical relationship with Bowie himself with the Parlophone recordings. He's made a lot of classic recordings on that label, but also because in September this year, Warner announced a separate deal to all of this with the Bowie estate. That means from 2023 onwards, Warner will become the exclusive partner for all of David Bowie's post-1968 recordings, including those currently distributed or licensed to Sony Music. Now, the David Bowie estate owns those recordings and it doesn't appear to be selling them. It's not selling them to Warner. The deal that it did with Warner for the recordings was just a licensing deal that was seemingly brokered by Warner's global boss of recorded music, Max Lusada. But what that deal does mean, the recorded music licensing deal with Warner, that means that Warner had an open line of negotiation with the Bowie estate. And so when it comes to Bowie's songwriting catalogue, separate group of rights, the songwriting catalogue, as opposed to the recordings catalogue, Warner might have been left in a prime position to make the acquisition. Then you think about why all of this makes particular strategic sense for Warner. Well, if Warner's going to be in complete control of Bowie's hit recordings catalogue from 2023 onwards, as has been confirmed, then it's an obvious complement to that to also be in control, or indeed own, Bowie's publishing rights, his songs. Imagine a Bowie special Super Bowl or a Grammy special, for example, celebrating all of Bowie's hit music, maybe around an anniversary of a particular release, with Warner earning both on the recorded side and on the publishing side, not only from the usage of music around that kind of event, but also on the subsequent uplift in Bowie's catalogue. So Warner has already nailed down control of the recorded rights, even though ownership of those recorded rights is staying with the estate for now, at least. So it makes perfect sense for Warner to also splash the cash, get $200 million down to acquire the songwriting catalogue. Looking elsewhere at what Warner might buy with the $535 million it's just raised, another obvious candidate is the independent label 300 Entertainment, which is headquartered in New York. 300 was co-founded and is now run by Kevin Lyles, who is a Warner alumni, has a lot of friends and close business relationships in the Warner Music Group building. It's been rumored that 300 is up for sale for around $400 million. And 300 already partners with Warner and Atlantic Records for, you know, some of its big artists. Its artists include Megan Thee Stallion and Young Thug and many others. One slightly misunderstood thing about 300 is back when it launched a number of years ago, when Leo Cohen was involved in the company, Google, now Alphabet, was one of its minority investors. But 300 has this year confirmed to me that Google and Alphabet is no longer a shareholder in its company. So I'm guessing that would make any prospective takeover by Warner or anyone else a cleaner transaction.
Are there any other perhaps more left field options for how you think Warner might invest this cash?
I mean, the SEC filing did say Warner is buying music or music-related assets, and that rather opens up the possibilities, that music-related assets bit. If I had to bet, I'd stick with what I said before, the Bowie catalogue, 300 Entertainment, and maybe an acquisition abroad. But there's also definitely the possibility that Warner could make a move to acquire, let's say, a music-related tech company or buying a piece of a music-related tech company. It's already invested in Roblox and many other tech first, if you like, companies over the past 12 to 18 months. One left field idea would be United Masters, which I discussed on this podcast just the other week. United Masters is a distribution and services platform for indie artists. And just the other week, it was valued at $550 million. It has Apple money in it, Alphabet's invested in it, and Andreessen Horowitz has invested in it. That, as an acquisition, United Masters might be appealing to Warner Music Group, because other than a small experiment with a platform called Levels Music, Warner hasn't really made a big move to take a bite out of the DIY artist market, which just in recorded music royalty terms last year turned over comfortably more than $1 billion.
For our second story this week, we're taking a look at Universal Music Group's new alliance with Authentic Brands Group, which will see both companies jointly acquire so-called name and likeness rights of artists. Tim, what's going on here, and how's it going to impact on the wider music business?
This is really interesting for a couple of reasons. Firstly, to explain a self-apparent idea behind name and likeness rights. If you wanted to buy my music rights, that would be one thing. You might acquire my recorded rights or my publishing rights, as we were discussing about David Bowie before. And that's really where the music industry's biggest and richest companies have been concentrating their investment capital for some time in acquisitions of music rights. But if you wanted to make a movie of my life, or you wanted to put my brand, my artist brand, or use my image in an advert or on a product, you wouldn't be able to do that without owning or part owning my name and likeness rights. For obvious reasons, name and likeness has been a nice segment of the music business for those who look after the estates of artists who are no longer with us. And that's something the company Universal's just partnered with, Authentic Brands Group, is a specialist in. Represents the name and likeness of icons like Elvis Presley, I believe, Marilyn Monroe, and a few others. Now, at the same time, some savvy companies in music, backed by institutional investor money, particularly Primary Wave, have been buying up name and likeness rights, whether in their entirety or just a portion of them, for a number of years. And Primary Wave owns a chunk of the name and likeness rights of Prince, for example, as well as Luther Vandross, Stevie Nicks, and also Whitney Houston, which is why Primary Wave is able to be such a active driver of a new Whitney Houston biopic film, I Want to Dance with Somebody, which I think is coming out next year. It might be the end of this year, but it's due to come out in the coming months. So why might Universal in particular be keen to enter this space? Well, the first bit is obvious. It can't let companies like Primary Wave and others keep on snapping up these lucrative name and likeness rights. But a big priority for Universal and its chairman, Sir Lucian Grange, in the years ahead is audiovisual content, and particularly audiovisual storytelling content around artists. Universal, just the other year, made a big splash launching Polygram as an internal kind of movie-making company. And Polygram's since gone on to launch films about Motown, I believe, and it did. I think it was involved in a brilliant documentary about the Bee Gees I watched the other week. Universal starting to have more exclusive control of name and likeness rights of legendary artists will not only help propel that audiovisual business forward, you know, making biopics and such like, but I'm guessing it will also help Universal and this Polygram division obtain exclusivity when it comes to making those artist biopics, almost sort of scaring off others in Hollywood from trying to do the same films. One last point on name and likeness rights is to see it from the seller's side. We already have a very vibrant catalogue acquisition space in music. We talk about it all the time. You know, delivering nine-figure acquisitions to artists. So Sting is reportedly the latest. He's supposed to be considering $250 million offers for his songwriting catalogue, according to Variety. But this name and likeness world now opens up another potentially very lucrative sale opportunity for these big name artists, especially the kind of legendary icons. And the news that Universal Music Group, which is the biggest music rights company in the world, the news that Universal is taking name and likeness so seriously now and is getting ready to co-invest, we're imagining some weighty capital in this world. I mean, that obviously means we're going to see heightened competition for these name and likeness rights, which in turn is going to no doubt drive up the average price being paid for them.
Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends will be back next week with more insight into today's global music industry. Thank you to Volley Music for the support. Once again, listeners can check out what they do at volymusic.com. If you like this episode, subscribe to Talking Trends by searching for Music Business Worldwide on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. We appreciate you spending some of your valuable time with us.